The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us this morning as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
On today's show, we're going to answer a couple of listener emails. The first one is concerning how to afford
how to afford
healthcare if you retire early, specifically before age 65, when most people are connected then to Medicare. So how could you afford that? And secondly, we have a question on IRA distributions, RMDs, and connection to a special needs trust. So a couple of very specific and, well, I guess one's kind of broad. The health care question is pretty broad. The IRA in coordination with a special needs trust issue is very specific, but does happen more often than you might think. So we're going to answer that question here a little bit later. This initial question is... we've got Justin Fundalinski from the office in here with us.
Howdy.
Jim is here as well.
I am here.
Ready to make fun of me for mispronouncing afford.
Well, you jump down my throat every time I...
No, I get it. I'm fine.
...say a Jimism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's okay. I just...
He was talking about a fjord, where, you know, like a bay of some sort. A fjord.
That's reaching a lot, yeah. Justin, but thanks for...
I was trying to defend you
there. Thanks
for
sticking up for me. So I don't have the question about the fjord, so you guys will have to take it. Although, before we get going here,
we have house planning, keeping.
House planning. House cleaning. It's usually house cleaning, he says.
Yeah.
Now we're house planning.
Yes. Yeah.
Whatever. We have some things we have to clean up.
In our personal lives.
Yeah.
No, on the radio show. Next week will be our first inaugural. Inaugural.
No.
You I said it right before.
You said it so perfectly before, yeah.
Inaugural.
No.
Inaugural is fine.
Inaugural.
Yes, but no, only one G. You said it right that time, but before it was inaugural or something like that. I can't even do it.
For those who don't know, we just finished recording the Colorado version of this show, and I nailed that word when Chris couldn't come up with it.
It was on the tip of my tongue, and suddenly Jim leaps to my to my assistance and spits out inaugural, and it was like, whoa.
It was amazing.
It was perfect. But that was it. I guess that's your one shot for the day.
That was it.
Inaugural.
Now when my brain is thinking of it, that is it. But we have some house cleaning, so get to...
The inaugural version of the live broadcast of the Retirement and IRA show
is next
that we've
week.
Been threatening or promising or whatever you want.
Whichever way you want to look at it.
So on October 16th.
Next week.
Well, that's just in a couple days, depending on when they're... Hopefully, this podcast is up before then.
So. Oh, that's right. This podcast comes out on the 14th or 16th. Mm-hmm. It may even be too late. We may not even have any.
We may not get any callers, but well, it'll be a nice... We don't want to get too inundated right off the bat. We want to make sure all the technology is working, but we're going to live stream this recording. We are recording this on Monday afternoon, October 9th. So October 16th will be our next recording, and we're going to open up the doors to the recording studio, if you will, and allow the public in while we're recording. So it will allow you to call us live while we record, kind of like an old-fashioned call-in radio show.
So are we going to hear the other people's voice, or is someone going to be intercepting the call?
If they call, they have to talk to us. That's part of the rule. Okay. You must talk to us and be nice to me and rude to Chris.
All right.
Well, I don't know about the last part.
Calling the office here, do we have a number?
Yep, we'll give it out during the show. Gotcha. We'll prompt you with what number to call.
And perfect.
I suspect it'll be the office number, which means Laura will be fielding phone calls.
Yeah, we have
calls.
An 800 number too, don't we?
Yeah, I can't remember what it is.
Most people have toll-free, but maybe we'll give out the 800 number at the time. We'll decide what we're going to do, but we will supply you at the time on October 16th at 2:30 Mountain Time is when we plan to start broadcasting. And
you just go to Jim Helps, Jim, HELPS.com, and we hope this is up by next Monday. Somewhere at the top of that website page will be a Broadcasting Now banner type thing. You'll see it, and you just click, and it will stream right from our webpage and allow people to hear us as we record the show. We're still going to be answering email questions. I'm still backed up with probably about five or six emails. We're going to get through two of them today. So initially, as our listeners get used to this, Chris, we're just going to still be answering email questions.
Well, you know what this feels like? When we first started the radio show, which is the roots of the Retirement and IRA show, it didn't start as a podcast. That's what we're experiencing now, but it started as a little old radio show that was 30 minutes.
30 minutes
on a local radio station here, actually the oldest AM radio station west of the Mississippi.
Oh,
there's a fun fact for you.
I didn't know that.
Still using some of that same technology from its inception. But we started as that, and we were able to take calls in. And I remember the first time that we opened it up to take calls, we... I'm pretty sure had your mom ready.
Mom called
to ask the first questions because we were worried nobody would call in. And so we planted some family members to call in, and this kind of feels like that now that we're not sure if we're actually going to get a phone call.
Well, we can send Junior out, get on a cell phone and call with disguise his voice like a German accent or something.
Or he can talk about pecan pie.
I need to eat some pecan.
Yeah, the people here haven't heard the other show, so they don't know what we're talking
about.
So they
don't know.
Apparently, there's folks in the United States that pronounce pecan pecan. I'm not sure I believe that, Justin, but...
I will find that.
Well, after the show, you can
find
show
the details.
Me. I'm not sure they weren't just making fun of
you. But anyways, listeners, our iTunians, we're really trying to put this podcast, the Retirement and IRA Show, for you. You're going to notice also some changes to our personal website, big changes coming along. We have a video coming out shortly, a new introductory cartoon video on the homepage.
Cartoon?
It's a cartoon video, yeah. And talks a little bit about what we do as a firm. We hired a company from London, created it. So
they have British accents?
No, they have American voiceover specialists. But when you call them, they have thick, heavy British accents. We chatted with them on the phone.
I've learned another thing about pecans.
What's that?
So there's a fourth pronunciation, and I have a map of the United States. It's like a heat map of how different areas pronounce
it. So we've got pecan, pecan, pecan. Isn't on there, is it?
No, it is.
Yeah, and what's the fourth one?
It's, I think one is just capitalized, so maybe they accent it differently. One is pecan, and one other one is pecan. You got to see it.
You're killing me.
Take a look at it. Tell me if
it's a nut. Why do we need all these names?
Because we're nutty.
Pecan.
Are we done? So because pecan, our iTunians have pecan. No idea. What we can't do is record two podcasts and on the second podcast continue as if we're talking on the first podcast.
We mentioned where this came from.
the discussion about pronunciation of pecan.
Okay, from the first show.
Yeah, but we told people that, so it's all good.
Okay.
We can stop. I'd say the majority from this map I'm looking at, pecan is...
Pecan? Thank you. Pecan. Thank you. That's the way we say it in the Northeast. Bostonian. Pecan. Yes. Pecan. Because it's spelled P-E-C-A-N. You spell, you pronounce P-E, P, or, and C-A-N,
what about
can.
Petrified? That's, do you pronounce it petrified?
Yeah. Petrified.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Anyway. At least you're consistent. Okay. Jim got an elk.
I did get an elk. So let's bring our listeners up to date. I left, today is Monday the 9th. I left actually on Friday the 6th. Drove to Mika, Colorado. So if any listeners out there, and I know we have some iTunians out there who also hunt. One iTunian was in Zimbabwe hunting recently.
Oh, wow.
Others are hunting in Alaska. So anybody who enjoys elk, the place to go is Mika. Mika is in Rio Blanco County, Colorado, home to the largest migratory herd of elk.
So those of you trying to look it up in Google, Mika is spelled M-E-E-K-E-R.
Meeker.
Mika.
Yeah, there's an R in there.
No, I'm just clarifying for those around the country, not from Boston.
Yeah, not Mika.
It's all fine.
And he's not talking about his car.
Yeah,
okay.
Meeker. Is
Meeker.
Where it's,
whatever.
It's Colorado. I didn't realize it was the largest migratory herd.
In the state of Colorado, if not the country, I don't know.
No,
Wyoming may have the, because Wyoming has that whole elk reserve area.
And they migrate around. So I think they're still considered migratory. And there's more elk than I've ever...
Yeah. So in the state of Colorado, the largest migratory herd is in Rio Blanco County. So the land that we hunt on is private land. It took me 5 hours to drive there. I got there Friday afternoon around 3. Checked into the hotel. Actually, I got there around 3:30. Checked into the hotel, put all my stuff inside the hotel, changed into my hunting clothes, and started driving to the land we hunt on. Got there about 5, and a little after 7, we had 2 elk on the ground. So it took us longer to actually drive there than it did to
get
our
2 elk. Did you wear
your camo? I had to. In the state of Colorado, you have to.
Oh. What? You have to wear camo?
Yeah. Not camo. Blaze orange.
Oh, yeah. I meant camo.
Yeah, I had my camo pants on, which is pointless because
this man owns more camouflage clothing than any 12 people would ever need. The only reason I know that is that when he moved out of his house, I helped him move some of the camo from the basement on where it was hanging, room after room of camo.
Wow.
Like there was a room full
of camo tops.
There's a room full of camo pants.
I went a little crazy, I will admit. I've lightened up a lot. I donated. So if you see a lot of homeless transients walking around in camo, it came from me because I donated it all.
Uh-huh. I'm glad you got to use it this year.
Well, I started to realize you only need so much camo.
No, really?
Whoa.
What a shock.
And I also realized, because I actually had a stock up on these elk, and I started...
Sneak up on them?
Yeah, on
the
elk.
Oh, you had to be sneaky?
Tina shot hers from a blind, but I was out walking. And as I'm sneaking up on it, I started realizing it was kind of pointless buying all this camo anyways because I have to cover it
with blaze orange.
Right.
So it defeats the whole purpose of wearing camo.
Can the elk not see the orange?
No.
Well, I was told that they can't see in color.
Colorblind, right.
So what they're really looking for is the human silhouette. So that's why we would stay behind trees and everything as we were walking up to them to shield our silhouette.
Or a bear.
Silhouette.
You could hide behind a bear.
Could hide behind a bear. Well, elk will run from bear, so you wouldn't want to hide behind it. You wouldn't want to be in a bear costume trying to sneak up on elk. I thought
that might blend in a little better.
Right? But see, they'd run from a bear. Maybe if you were, I don't know.
Even baby black bears?
Yeah. Grizzly
bears do take down elk.
Yeah.
I know that.
I think elk would run from a black bear as well. We were not dressed in a black bear outfit. We were dressed in Hunter Blaze Orange.
It's a little warmer probably than the camo. Yeah.
Well, let me tell you, I got in there and it was nice and warm. The snow came in today, which is Monday the 9th, but we were out of there the very next day. I had my elk on the ground. We gutted it out, hung it, went back there the next day, finished quartering it, packed it in the game bags, threw it in the back of our truck, and started driving home. So it was a very quick. Anybody out there who definitely wants to get an elk, Rio Blanco County in Mica, Colorado is where you need to go, hands down.
So what are the details on that? I don't know if you even know. I mean, how does someone from out of state get an elk tag? Is that easy?
They just buy one.
You can just buy one?
Yeah, it'd be
it's
about
not like a lottery
bucks.
Or anything
it's
like that?
It's a little
that.
Over 600. Well, the area we're in has a lot of tags available. So I don't want to get into the whole tag outfit of how Colorado works. It's very convoluted and complicated.
Okay.
But for the most part, you can probably get a tag the first year you apply there. If not, you might need one preference point, which means it might take you two years to get it. Mm. But the area, Rio Blanco County, as all of Colorado, is broken down into game management units. Depending on which unit you choose, could take a while.
Gotcha.
The unit we choose is very easy to get a tag, but we hunt private land. It's not public land. There is no public land out there that you're really going to be able to walk on and within 2 hours drop an elk and get the heck out of there.
Right.
This is private land. We pay a trespass fee to go on it, and it's well worth it.
Gotcha. Is it harder to get a bull elk tag than a...
Yeah, I won't even bother with it. It's not harder to get a bull elk tag, but the landowner will charge me $1,200 to go on his land and hunt a cow. He wants, I think, $4,000 or $5,000 to hunt a bull.
Oh, wow.
And I've got plenty of antlers on my wall. I don't need more.
Gotcha.
I'm looking for meat.
I'm just thinking for our listeners, you know.
Okay. All right, well, enough banter about hunting. We have two email questions. And going forward, listeners, hopefully next week we'll go off without a glitch. But I have a feeling we either won't get any callers because we're just announcing today that we are actually going live. But remember, in the future, listeners, you'll be able to listen 2 p.m. Mountain Time, 2:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. Mountain Time. Just go to jimhelps.com, click the Listen Now button, and as Chris and I continue to answer email questions, mm-hmm. we will open up the phone lines also and take your questions live. We feel easier because we're going to be able to interact with the people, just like when we did KFKA Live. We could ask mm-hmm. them questions, get a little bit more information, and really spend some better, I think, quality time answering questions quicker, because Chris could sometimes go on and on and on and on and on, and when we're actually talking to the person, maybe I can keep you on track a little and get right to the pithy point.
I look forward to that. Yeah.
So it'll be good.
We all do, right?
Okay. Yeah. Well, we have our first question today, an Iowawian from Iowa, and
Are you sticking with that?
Say what?
Iowawian?
Iowawian.
Iowan, Iowawian, whichever way you want to pronounce it. I
prefer
Iowawian.
Okay.
Why don't you get a heat map of the pronunciation of...
It'll be dead cold, frozen on
Iowawian. Yeah.
You don't think anyone else calls them Iowawians?
No.
No.
Mm-mm.
You never know. Mm. Okay. They begin.
How about Hawkeye?
I am from Iowa. They begin. Mm-hmm. I am from Iowa. I am 56... and my husband is 58.
Do I need to write any of this down?
If you'd like to.
Okay.
Attached is our financial data. I'm not going to read all of their data. They did provide a very good Excel spreadsheet of all of their data. I will just summarize their spreadsheet at the end of reading their email.
Mm-hmm.
How do you go about withdrawing funds from mutual funds from the right category? I retired from my job and have picked up part-time work. My husband is still working full-time because we need the health care benefits due to insurance costs. But he would like to retire as well. However, health insurance for us would be a major cost. How do we budget for these medical costs? Let me know when you are going to be on the radio answering this question. Love your show. And, of course, she signed her real name, but she also put in quotation marks.
Hmm.
She also put in quotation marks, Georgette.
Just what I always wanted, my own little bunny rabbit. I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him and squeeze him.
I'm not a bunny rabbit.
And then she promptly sent two more emails. The second email came a few days later with the same question. And then she sent a third email, to which I finally replied back to her and said, we'll get to your question in a minute. But she did go on, and it did write this, though. How do you go about withdrawing funds from your retirement accounts in retirement? If I have to ask this question to you now in my 50s, how am I ever going to understand this in my 80s? Mm. Mm-hmm. And I really like how she put that in there. Mm-hmm. So we talk about this all the time, listeners. Before we jump into some thoughts that she may want to consider as she tries to, essentially her and her husband want to retire early, and they're being sidetracked because of the cost of health insurance. But she makes a very good point, and we talk about this all the time, Justin, when we start working with either clients or prospects. And Chris, you and I talk about this all the time on the podcast itself. I say to people, I may be talking to the 50-year-old you, but I am advocating for the 80-year-old you. And we often try to get our listeners to understand. And she's saying, look, if I don't understand this in my 50s, and I got to ask you, she recognizes by her 80s, she's definitely not going to get it. Now, fortunately, hopefully in her 80s, her health insurance needs will be a little bit easier to understand because she'll be on Medicare, Medicare with probably a Medigap type coverage on top of it, hopefully, or whatever they're going to have in another 30 years. But more importantly, what she's getting to is she recognizes she's not going to have the same mental capacity in her 80s than she does in her 50s. And to me, the medical coverage, even though it's expensive, is, especially in your 60s, 70s, and 80s, fairly straightforward. Now, sometimes there can be some nuances if you have employer-sponsored or pension-style benefits that include some sort of health benefits on top of that. But it's all the other planning. All the other planning we do, we try to get clients and listeners to understand, keep it simple. The simpler you can make it in your 50s, the better it's going to be in your 80s. So I really like how she put that.
Yeah, and it's really the 56-year-old her, which is right now writing this email, that's hopefully keeping not just in the back of her mind, but the front of her mind when she's figuring these things out, to watch out for the 80-year-old her so that she does put things in place now that are easy to follow, a plan that's easy to manage, not too convoluted and complex, because the last thing you're wanting to figure out in your 80s is, how do I decipher this complex contraption that the 50-year-old me put together, thinking I was always going to be a financial genius and be able to track all these details and jump through all these hoops. So I'm glad that she's at least recognizing that and trying to make a plan now that will make the 80-year-old
right. and,
her.
And we recognize most of our iTunian listeners are do-it-yourselfers. Mm-hmm. That's why they're listening. But I'm telling you guys and gals, even if you do-it-yourselfers and you're in your 50s, which is probably the age bracket that the majority of our listeners are in, you're just not going to understand this as you get into your 80s. We talk repeatedly of a Harvard study that came out almost a decade ago, wanted to know why elderly people were the victims of financial fraud, did a very in-depth study. This was the economics and psychology department of Harvard. They mapped the human brain of people of various ages as they gave them fairly straightforward financial-related questions, and they found a few striking developments. First thing that they notice is the part of our brain that understands financial concepts is one of the last to develop and first to degrade. And it answers two questions. Why do kids in their teens and 20s usually make poor money decisions? And why do people in their 80s and 90s fall victim to financial fraud? It's because the part of our brain that understands all this is going to take a while to develop and then begins to degrade. And they also found in this study the pinnacle age, I call it, the peak of your ability, the peak of your brain's ability to understand financial concepts is age 53. And when you graph the growth stage of this part of our brain, it looks like a bell curve. Takes a while to develop, then it peaks at 53, then it starts dropping again. Now, it's not a cliff, because if it was a cliff, I'd be dumb as a brick because I'm 54. But I also understand at 53, my brain is on a downward trajectory, whereas Junior, he's only 34.
34, yeah. You got it. Wow.
So he's 34. He's 20 years. Yeah, I am very jealous. He's 20 years younger than me. But your brain is still developing, Junior.
Oh, well, I don't know about that.
And as my brain is degrading, yours is actually improving every day.
Mm-hmm.
So every day mine is getting a little worse and yours is getting a little bit better. But, you know, all jokes aside, it is true. And I recognize in 20, 30 years, I'm not going to be sharp as I am now. I'm not going to be able to pronounce the English language as well as I do now. I'm not going to be as quick and witty and pithy as I am now. So it's going downhill, and she recognizes this as well. And this is one reason we have our secure retirement income process. It's a very simple retirement planning strategy, and we keep it simple for a reason. We know our clients and our listeners, as you age, you're not going to get it. So the younger you has to put in place a plan to take care of the older you. Now, let's get back to Georgette's question from Iowa. She essentially is retired. She stopped work at 56. She's taken a little bit of part-time work. She doesn't tell me how much money she's making, Justin. So we're going to have to make a few guesses or assumptions.
Talk broadly.
Now, her husband is 58, and he too would like to retire. But he's not because he still wants access to the health insurance because they've looked for health insurance outside of getting it from an employer, and they realize that as they get older, it gets pretty damn expensive. So they want to know, how do they go about getting health insurance? That's something that she emailed me again several times, and I reached out to her and told her, you need to try to find a health insurance broker in Iowa. We don't sell health insurance here, and we're not going to answer your question from a standpoint of, here's how Iowa treats health insurance, here's the mandates you have to be covered, here's what the policies are going to cost. We're not going to do that. What we're going to do is we're going to help answer the second part of her question, Justin, which was, how does she go about spending from her accounts for the best health insurance
benefits, I guess.
I don't want to say the word benefits.
Premium tax credits.
Premium tax really credits, thank you. Because under Obamacare, they have about 2 million of assets, Chris. But under Obamacare rules, if we can teach them or explain to them that if they were to control the income they generate, they could look on paper as being low income earners.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they have 2 million of assets, they can control. They're in a tax planning window, right? You call it a window, Chris. You call it a void, Justin.
It's a big void.
Right. I call it a tax hole. They got a big tax hole. And they can go from their mid-50s to when required minimum distributions begin at 70 and a half. They're in control on how they spend money. So the first thing I wanted to look at was their tax diversification. And Justin and I talk about this ad nauseum with our planning clients in the secure retirement income process. We try to get people to understand that in retirement, you're going to take assets from one of three type of accounts. Accounts where the money you take from it is going to be always taxable, maybe taxable, or never taxable. I'm pleased to say, Justin, this couple has incredible tax diversification.
Good for them.
They have about $1 million in always taxable IRAs, 401ks, 457 accounts.
So anytime they take money out of that, ordinary income tax rules, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So they have about $1 million in those accounts. They have about $260,000 in never taxable accounts,
okay.
Roth IRAs. Divided equally, about 130 in his and 130 in hers. And then they have about $550,000, Justin, in maybe taxable mutual fund investments inside regular brokerage accounts, not inside any type of IRA, 401k, 457. That is pretty damn good tax diversification.
Yeah, and something on that maybe taxable account is they'd want to focus and figure out exactly what their basis is and how withdrawals from that account could affect their taxable income. So
absolutely, because some of the key things we do with people in this situation is get them to understand you can be paper rich but income poor during this planning period, during the tax planning window, void or whole, whatever euphemism you want to call it. Chris calls it window, Justin is void, I'm whole. But what we're trying to do is just give you a visual that during this time period, assuming the husband was to stop working, Chris, because right now he's still working, so that's filling, his income is filling a lot of this whole void or window that we talk about. But if he stopped working, there's no income coming in. Now they're in full control on how they are going to fill their income needs. Do they take it from accounts where the distributions are always taxable, maybe taxable, or never taxable? Well, when you're dealing with Obamacare tax credits, the first thing you want to do, Justin, is what? Make sure you generate enough money to avoid what?
Medicaid. Yeah, I mean, if you don't want to be on Medicaid, you could certainly do that. I've personally never been on it, so I don't know how good or bad it is, but I'm sure it provides the health care benefits you need. But if you want to avoid Medicaid and you want to work with a health insurance provider that you're familiar with, or possibly your doctors don't accept Medicaid, so you want to make sure that you have an insurance program that will accept that insurance program, or an insurance program that will be accepted by your doctor, then yeah, you want to find an actual private insurance company that'll do that for you. So
right. So the point is, listener, and we have counseled in the office people in both sides of that spectrum. No, don't mention any names, but we have specific people, Justin, you'll remember, they did not want to be on Medicaid at all.
Right.
And they made sure they took enough money out of their IRAs first, listener, to earn enough money to keep them out of the Medicaid portion of the Obamacare rules, but did not generate too much money where they lost all the premium tax credits.
Yeah, so let's talk about that a little bit. So once you jump over that ledge, right, so you get beyond the amount of money that keeps you on Medicaid, that's basically at that point is where you get your highest premium tax credit to offset the premiums for your health insurance, right? So the premium tax credit is something that the government is handing down as a tax credit to help offset expensive healthcare premiums. So once you jump over that threshold from the Medicare or Medicaid income limit, right, and you get right over the edge, that's when you get your largest credit. So the idea is you want to take out enough, maybe always taxable income would be a good starting point there.
The IRAs, 401ks, right, and 457s and 403bs, those plans.
Just to fill up that level. Now, keep
in
mind,
if they don't want to be on Medicaid.
Right. Right.
If they want to be on Medicaid, don't take from that.
Exactly.
Or take just a little bit to be on Medicaid, because for all the people we've worked with, Justin, who want to stay off Medicaid, we've had several who wanted to be on Medicaid.
Sure. So personal and decision there. Yep.
They are asset wealthy. You look on their balance sheet. Here's the unique thing with the Obamacare tax credits. Yes, it's means tested, but it's means tested through income, not
taxable
assets.
Taxable income. Yep.
Exactly. It's not based on your assets. So we had clients who had millions like this couple on Medicaid, and we've had other clients adamant they wanted to stay off Medicaid. So the first thing they being the husband and wife, need to decide is, do you want to be on Medicaid or off?
Right.
Now, we have one person, again, we won't mention any names. She was in Northern Colorado, a certain city in Northern Colorado, and her doctor was not in Medicaid, and she had to go to a different doctor. She said that didn't bother her. But she also needed a procedure, and the only Medicaid physician who would cover that procedure was in Denver. And she had to go all the way down to Denver and fight Denver traffic.
Yep.
But that's the cost to be on Medicaid. You're on Medicaid, she doesn't pay anything for her health care, even though she had the assets to pay for it. Now, you can be angry over that, listeners. Complain to Washington, complain to the congressman, well, complain to the Democrats who passed it. But that's the rules. Now, you can laugh, but not one Republican voted for it. But that's the rules that they put in place. They're going to means test it by income, not assets. So you create something, people are going to game the system.
Right.
And We have people, Chris, from both sides of the spectrum. So they got to decide, do they want to be on Medicaid or off? And we're not going to get into the pros and cons of Medicaid, like Justin said. We're not on it. I can't tell you if it's good or bad. But some of the things, not every doctor is on it, and you need a procedure. You have to find a Medicaid or a facility that will accept Medicaid.
Right. I think that probably on Medicaid, the big thing is that you're probably going to see more inconveniences in getting the services that you want. So
once she decides if she wants to be on or off, that will help her determine the first thing. How much money do they take out of the always taxable accounts? Mm-hmm. And there she's going to have to work with someone who's very knowledgeable, a good tax preparation person in Iowa who's knowledgeable on the Obamacare tax credits, and make sure they get enough of these credits, to get enough of the credits, take out enough income.
Yeah, you want to max out that premium tax credit, and it's right over that threshold, so... And every dollar you take out over that threshold, it might be incremental dollars like 50 or 100, but that premium tax credit actually starts going down over time, okay? And once you get out of a certain level, I think it's 4 times the poverty limit, is it? Then it just goes away completely. So it cliffs off at that point in time. So there's a range where you get a premium tax credit, but the idea would be to maximize it as much as you can, and then you can buy a healthcare plan on probably healthcare.gov, or if Iowa manages their own exchange, and then you go out there and you purchase it there. So there's a good way to reduce your premiums, likely by $5,000 to $10,000 a year, I would guess.
Absolutely. The premium tax credits can be quite substantial if you manipulate your money. Remember, listener, we gave you some kudos for having very good tax diversification. So the first thing, decide if you want to be on or off Medicaid. Second thing, depending on the answer to the first, that will dictate how much comes out of your always taxable account. Once you hit those limits, whether you want to be on or off Medicaid, the next accounts you're going to look at will be your Roth accounts and your maybe taxable accounts. Roth would be your never taxable account, and the $550,000, that near $500,000 you have in the maybe taxable account. What you want to do in that account, Justin, is take out mostly basis and not a lot of the gain. Or if you take out the gain, make sure you have the losses to deduct it.
Right. You'd want to make sure that if you've already essentially gotten to the point of income taxation that you want by pulling out money from an always taxable account, an IRA or 401k, if you start going into that maybe taxable arena, you're going to be harvesting gains. It's going to happen. But hopefully you can offset it by harvesting losses also. So if you can equal it out, great. But if you end up taking out too much gains, it's going to change that credit for you.
Exactly.
So you got to be very careful with that. We're on the side of the Roth. I mean, that's an easy one. Just take the money out, right? But we got to make sure they're over 50. No.
They're over.
They're good.
Yeah, they will not have. Well, with the Roth, it's going to be a little difficult from this sense, listener. After the age of 59 and a half, and you're not quite there yet, you can get the gains out of the Roth 100% tax-free. The money they put into the Roth, Justin, up until the age of 59 and a half,
right,
is the first money to be removed.
Right.
So I'm guessing with $130,000 in each Roth IRA, they might have started contributing way back in 98.
Mm-hmm.
So there could be quite a bit of contributions. That's the first money that's going to come out. Once your contributions are fully removed, and that's the first money to come out, do not take the earnings, listener. That's when you're going to have to go to the maybe taxable account. So you're going to have, again, this isn't easy. It's going to be a lot of manipulation back and forth. But if you look at the amount of income you'll be able to, or the maximum amount of income you can declare to get a good premium tax credit, it's worth the effort.
Right.
Because you can save, as Justin said, $5,000-$10,000 a year in the cost of your health care. But you got a couple of pitfalls in front of you, and you're going to have to recognize that they're there. One is, again, the Roth IRA. Right now, until you hit 59 and a half, now your husband is 58. He's only got a year and a half to go. So what I would do is, if he does retire and is going to try this game, you're going to debit listener from his Roth IRA first, especially in another year and a half, because all $130,000, assuming the Roth is 5 years old, and I'm sure it is, will be tax-free. And then in 3.5 years, listener, when you're 59 and a half, you can start attacking your Roth IRA. But one other caveat that they threw in there is they're going to start claiming Social Security, they said, at 62.
Yeah, and that's something you got to watch out for. So you got to remember that we're saying withdrawing up until a limit, but other things that'll contribute to the income that's taxable is obviously other income that you have. So if you have any kind of pension already, or you're going to turn one on, Social Security that is taxable, in this case, we're only focusing on the... No, it's all Social Security, sorry. So all Social Security income with the premium tax credit will be counted towards your income.
And she gave us those numbers, Justin. They're going to claim at 62, he is going to be receiving $1,436 a month. She will be receiving $909 a month and another $467 a month in pension. So my quick calculation, Chris, looks like about $3,000.
$2,800.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
and that's going to probably kill a lot of their premium tax credit.
It'll kill some of it. I don't think it'll kill it all, but it'll definitely kill some of it. They're going to start sloping away from that Medicaid limit and more towards the limit where it cuts off. But they'll probably still, if that was the only income they had, they would still have a premium tax credit out there.
Which brings the point that they might want to rethink taking Social Security at 62.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Until you hit 65, you might want to have more control over where the money comes from to live on during those years, so you can manipulate this
a little better.
I 100% agree. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nope, and that was one of the things I was going to tell them. I would question turning Social Security on at 62. You might want to wait at the earliest 65 for, as you said, Chris, flexibility. They have wonderful tax diversification. And all our iTunians out there, you should be paying attention to this. These people did it right. They got about half their money in always taxable IRAs, 401ks, 457s, about a quarter of their money in maybe taxable brokerage accounts, and another quarter of their money in never taxable Roths. That is beautiful.
It is beautiful. It's something we
This is why we tell people to do this. Yeah. Look at the flexibility, Chris, this couple is going to have to manipulate their income stream during the tax planning window, void or hole, whatever you want to call it, the period of time between retirement and age 70 and a half. When their RMDs begin, there's not going to be any tax flexibility at that point. All this income's coming in. But if they had all their money in IRAs and 401ks, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Right.
Because she said they need $60,000 a year to live on during this period. Well, $60,000 is going to eat up most of the premium tax credits.
Oh, all of it there, yeah.
So they have to look on paper being their tax return, as being poor people.
Yep.
And the way to do it is to take from the Roth, especially after the age of 59 and a half, take from basis in your taxable account and take just enough from your always taxable retirement accounts to either stay right under the Medicaid limits if you want to claim Medicaid, or be right over the limits to disqualify you for Medicaid to get on an Obamacare plan. And the last thing I want to say before we wrap this up, in order to do all this, you do have to buy your health insurance from the exchange.
Mm-hmm.
I do not know if Iowa is on the federal exchange or if they maintain their own exchange. But I also know you can go to a health insurance broker. You're not going to pay them, and they can help you on the exchange. But you have to buy a policy from them on the exchange to get this tax credit. And the other great thing is, when you fill in on the exchange your income, no one checks it. That's right, folks. No one checks it. You're going to fill it in and give them your scout's honor that this is the income you're going to make this year.
Yeah, they check it in the
end. They check at the end. Yeah. They don't check it at the beginning, but at the end, they'll check it. So don't lie on it. But the point is...
So you don't have to have all this paperwork ready to go at that time.
Right. No. And they give you the premium credit right then and there.
Yeah.
It's not that you have to pay the full premium and then get it back as a refund. They just say, okay, based on everything you told us, this $1,000 a month health care policy is going to cost you $200 a month.
Yep.
And... That's it. They give you that premium credit right away.
And if it turns out, just so you know, if it turns out that you did have more income and you didn't deserve all of that premium tax credit,
then you cheat.
Then you actually pay more on your taxes because there's that offset of the credit, right? And vice versa. If you deserved more of it and you didn't get it through a reduction of premium, then you get an actual credit on your tax return. So it can go either way. So they're just kind of estimating it so people, I mean, it makes it really easy for planning because now we don't have to drag more money into the picture and think of taxes. So it's great for us.
Yeah, I just, you know, all is not lost for this couple. She's retired early. Whether or not they can retire early, Chris, we're not saying that. We have no idea if they have the finances in place to be able to maintain early retirement. We don't know a lot about it. But if we're to assume, hopefully you did do an analysis, listener. If not, you should have a retirement plan in place. Try to find an advisor in Iowa near you who specializes in retirement planning. Or if you don't mind working with people over the internet, and more people nowadays are becoming very comfortable with that, you can counsel with a qualified retirement planner anywhere in the country, even with us if you so choose, because we work with people throughout the United States.
Yeah.
And you need to really have a good plan in place to see if your thoughts of retiring at 56 and 58 are feasible. I think they are, but I have no idea because I just don't know enough about their financial situation.
I agree with that, and I also agree with there's a lot of like say they have already concluded that they can retire right now, and they may very well be there. There's a lot of moving parts just regarding this premium tax credit.
Absolutely.
So if it's going to save you $5,000 to $10,000 a year, maybe you just take $500 and hire someone to help you out the first couple of years, right? Just pay someone that knows what they're doing and get the ball rolling for you. And after that, it should be autopilot. So I would definitely recommend getting someone who knows the tax side of it and the withdrawal strategy side of it.
And one more recommendation, and we made this recommendation to many people who've counseled with us, Justin. Before the husband retires, I would open a HELOC line of credit.
Yep.
I'm just assuming she doesn't get into her mortgage, but I'm just assuming your house is nearly paid off, if not paid off, so you got some good equity in your home, hopefully. And open up a home equity line of credit. Going to cost you about $50 a year to maintain it. You should be able to get interest of about prime plus one or prime plus zero, so still very low. Payments for the first 10 or 15 years, depending on where you go, will be interest only. And the point is, between retirement and 65, it gives you one extra option. You're going to be able to take money from a Roth, but there's a negative to that. You take the money from the Roth, it's not in the Roth anymore. And you're not going to be able to get it back in because you're not working. But you're going to be able to get some money from a Roth, which is never taxable. You're going to be able to get some money from your IRA, which is always taxable, from your brokerage account, which may be taxable. And then as a last resort, or even a first line of defense, the HELOC, which is going to have very low interest initially at first. We're not worried about this. We've counseled people on this strategy all the time. Loan proceeds do not reduce the premium tax credit.
Right. They don't touch your taxable income.
They don't touch
right.
the taxable income at all. And you use that HELOC line of credit in conjunction with the other three accounts to stay within the level that you need to get the maximum tax credit. And then you got $550,000 in a taxable brokerage account. Once you hit 65, you can start selectively accessing a lot of that money through selective sales and pay back the HELOC line of credit right away. Mm-hmm. We counsel this with people who are doing this strategy all the time. It's one extra pool to give you extra access, and you might pay a few $100 in interest, oh horror, because you're going to get thousands of dollars in premium tax credits.
Absolutely. Right. So this is a, you know, retiring early sounds nice, and a lot of people think, oh, I can only retire early if I'm obnoxiously wealthy where I don't have to worry about this kind of stuff. Not necessarily. You might be able to pull it off with planning, with some strategies, paying attention to things like this, and using like the HELOC as a bridge between the kind of get you over the hump to when things really change when you hit 65, mainly in the healthcare side, and then at 70 and a half when you hit the RMD side. But you've got all these years from retirement to traditional Medicare age of 65, where things, as we all know, healthcare has gotten so expensive, you've got to take some kind of creative approaches to try to band-aid that thing, no pun intended, with healthcare, but to get you through. And with the right strategies, you might actually be able to make it.
Absolutely. So a little bit of planning there, folks. Good question. We hadn't really delved into this much depth on this topic before, but hopefully this listener from Iowa found our answer beneficial.
Yeah. So we're at 50 minutes right now on that one topic.
Whoa.
Are we taking a break or are we?
Yeah, we'll take a break. And I know you have to get to your mom. Do you want to cut the show short today or do you want to record another segment? I'll let you call it. I know because you did say.
Well, the only reason I have this question that we've got is a fairly lengthy question once we get it, because we have to explain to everybody what
it is.
Oh,
yeah. I can take an hour answering that question easily.
So this, we either, I think, need to do a different question if you're prepared for that, or table this question for next time when we have time.
Why don't we take a quick break and we'll let our listeners know, and I'll look through our stack of stuff. You can see all the emails I still have to answer. If we can find one that we can get done in 15, 20 minutes. I know I could answer it in 15 or 20 minutes, but if you guys could get through it in that little bit of time, we'll do it.
Okay, great. Sounds good. So we'll take a break here, and might be a long break till next week, or it'll be a short, a short break, and we'll be back with another email question here on the Retirement and IRA Show.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Well, welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. The last segment, we went quite a while, actually, on this question of healthcare. How am I going to cover healthcare between early retirement and age 65? Hopefully, a lot of you found that beneficial. We've got a secondary question here, a little shorter topic, and yep. we're kind of working through a pile of email questions. And this particular one comes in from Tennessee, so we don't have a new state to apply a star to on the map. But
last week you got three, so
yeah,
don't be greedy.
I'm not complaining.
Don't be greedy. But so, what states are you still looking for? Let's give an announcement.
Quick rundown. So I'm going to call out these states specifically. If you happen to be listening from one of these states, please reach out to us with a question.
And put in your email you're from that state.
That's helpful. That's always helpful, too. Yes. We don't read minds.
We can't divine that.
So Nevada, Idaho, Montana, North Dakota, Nebraska, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Delaware.
I think that's it.
That's it. So Delaware, Mississippi, Louisiana, Arkansas, North Dakota, Nebraska, Montana, Idaho, Nevada. So we've got 9 states left. We've covered a lot. I'm
42.
I'm actually impressed.
41.
41. It's okay.
I'm not good at math.
No. I think presidential candidates have made the same
mistake.
Yes,
presidential candidates have made that same
mistake. So, 9. We're down to 9. If we can knock these out, then I'm not sure what we'll talk about. But maybe that'll be the end of the Retirement and IRA Show.
No,
okay.
Maybe
we're
we'll
assuming
start
we're actually
over.
Going to get the 9.
We can get a new map and fill it.
Or start filling by county.
Calls. That's next. We got to get a call from every state.
Oh, okay. Maybe that'll be it. But anyway, so we've got a question. Jim's got it. Looks kind of long, but he's going to
paraphrase. It's not really a question. It was a comment.
Oh.
And what we decided, because during the break, Junior went back to work. Actually, no, Junior went home because we kept him in here for 2 hours, an hour answering this question and then an hour on the Retirement and IRA Show Colorado version, which our iTunians don't hear anymore. But Justin had to leave. And what we decided is we would spend maybe 10, 15 more minutes because you have to get home to your mom. It's her birthday. And I just thought, well, we answered this gentleman's question a couple of weeks ago. And we guessed, we surmised, because he put his phone number in, you Googled his area code, and it was Tennessee, and we surmised he was from Tennessee. And he begins, thanks, Jim and Chris. Your reply was very helpful, and he confirmed, I'm trying to scan through this because it's a long email, that he is in Tennessee.
Very nice.
One of the things, the only thing I want to point out, and it's really the second and third paragraph of his email to us, which again isn't a question. It was more of a thank you type email. He did put, the decision to claim Social Security becomes very complex due to factors beyond one's control. He's talking to us here, Chris, as a retiree. He's trying to give us his insight as a retiree. Beyond one's control, such as longevity and health, future government changes to Social Security, and taxes. I agree with that statement.
Mm-hmm.
We see that all the time. We often say to people, I throw one more in here, your needs. If you need the money, we always say that. You may hire us to optimize your Social Security, but it's pointless if you need the money. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if your strategy is to file at 70 or 68 and your wife files at 66. That doesn't matter at all. If you need the money, you need the money.
Right.
But I agree totally with what he has to say. Other items we look at, we did a retirement analysis for a couple just recently where the man has a bona fide reason to believe his life expectancy will be shorter than average. Mm-hmm. And we plugged that into our system and recommended he actually claim early.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that. So we fully agree with this listener. The decision is complex, and you listeners have to look at your own health, your own longevity. Future government changes to Social Security, that one there is a little, I still believe if you are collecting, they're not going to come after you. That's my belief.
That's traditionally how that's worked, and you can imagine the torches and pitchforks in the street. If people made their plans, they've claimed, and then suddenly the rug's pulled out from under them as there's a drastic change to those who are actually already collecting. I think it is unlikely that any significant changes to Social Security will affect those already in the collection phase or even those that are on the verge of collecting. It's when they've got a few years to make adjustments, then they're going to say, well, you've got time to plan for this new way of doing things, so we're going to change for you. But those actually collecting, I think the chances are very, very low. But people always are pointing out, and I think that's the topic, one of the topics brought up in the email, that what about this 2034 when Social Security, quote, runs out of money? That isn't a choice. That's not a change they're making. If they run out of money, I can't get money anymore. Well, that's also, a lot of people use that as a scare tactic, I think, for a variety of reasons, but that's a little overblown. Run out of money simply means run out of the ability to pay you 100% of what they promised, but it's not out. It's not going to completely stop. And again, the chances that you actually collecting and they say, oh, we're going to cut your benefits now, even though you've been collecting them now for 10 years, almost unheard of.
And don't forget, they could pass a few rules, like Junior is gone, but he's 20 years younger than me. He's only 34. They could pass some rules affecting him, making him have to wait until, say, 70 as a full retirement age, which, voila, would, I'm just I don't know if this number is actuarially sound, but they could do a few changes to people in their 20s and 30s that all of a sudden, Chris, make the long-term projections of Social Security fully funded and allow people to continue to collect their benefits without having to cut their benefits. Right. So they don't necessarily have to come after people in their 60s, 70s, and 80s and cut their benefits. They can go after people in their teens, 20s, and 30s like they did in the 1980s. That's why you and I have to wait to 67 for full retirement, Chris, not 65. When they came after us in the 80s, I didn't even follow this. I didn't know. I was a teenager, early 20-year-old. I didn't pay attention. And that's probably what they're going to end up doing. Justin tells me that all the time. He knows he's probably going to have to wait to 70. He feels strongly they're going to make that change. But making him wait to 70, actuarially speaking, makes Social Security look so much. And it's just all of a sudden, boom, there's more money in the account. Even though they really didn't do anything, there's more money there. And they don't have to cut the benefits of existing retirees. I would be shocked if they ever passed anything that cuts the benefits of existing retirees. Then he lists the one other thing, taxes. Now that, folks, hold on to your seatbelts because they're going to get you on taxes. They may not cut your benefit, but Social Security used to always be tax-free. Then Reagan was the first to tax Social Security. And they passed a special rule on how they do it. And then Clinton came back and taxed more. Reagan taxed theoretically the first 50% of Social Security. Then Clinton taxed another 35% of Social Security to make it 85% taxable, or up to 85% of it could be subject to income taxes. And today, 15% of Social Security is tax-free. They're going to come after that last 15%. Probably. Whether you're claiming or not. So I don't think they're going to cut his benefit, but they may come after the last 15% that's tax-free.
But this issue goes to his comments. So read that section of his email where he talks about what he's observed from his
By his retiring friends. He goes on and he says, given these perceived risks of Social Security running out of money, many of our peers decided to take their Social Security at age 62, and a lot of them did so on the advice of their financial advisor. I'm interested to know if you are finding the same thing. These friends don't need the money, so they're just enjoying their early Social Security now and hedging against all the above unknown risks I mentioned. Again, health, longevity, changes and cuts to Social Security and taxes. So he's saying that he's noticing with his friends, people claiming early, many on the advice of a financial advisor, even though they don't need the money. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time with that.
Well, the cynical me, and you're somewhat cynical with me, I believe, but I won't speak for you. I'll let you give your own comments on this. But the cynical me says, well, of course their financial advisors are saying this, because if they take Social Security money out, they don't have to draw down their investment accounts, and I get to keep more of your money that I'm collecting a commission or fee upon.
I am shocked. So, you would think our esteemed industry would be populated by people who would do that.
Right. So there's that. There's ignorance, I guess, which I don't know if what's better or worse. They might be buying into this whole concept that you better take it now because it's going to run out and you're going to end up with nothing.
No, I think the cynical you was right as well. That's clearly not happen.
The cynical me, I think, is going to explain a lot of this advice. As sad as that is to admit about an industry in which we practice, there are still a lot of folks out there that are driven by
The AUM model,
which is we got to keep these assets in-house under management because we get to collect our 1% or more.
One and a quarter, one and a half.
Obscene numbers. And if you're not collecting Social Security, you're going to be drawing down these accounts to live on. And what does that mean? That means a
less
reduction
money.
In my pay. So me as an advisor, I want you to start taking that Social Security right away so that can protect that.
Yeah, if you're going to end up taking $20,000, $25,000 a year out of your retirement account, that could be a $200, $250, $300, $350 cut in the advisor's pay. May not sound like much, but he or she's sitting there every day thinking, well, wait a minute, this is going to be every year. And I don't care. That clouds your judgment. This whole notion, now you're going to get me go down a rabbit hole, and I won't. I'll crawl back out. But this whole notion that somehow the AUM model, and it's now the keyword is now fiduciary. Everybody and their uncle claim to be a fiduciary. And, oh, I'm a fiduciary. I'm on your side. I'm just charging you a percent of your assets. Therefore, my advice is untainted and pure as the driven snow. That's bullshit. And we can say that now because this is a podcast. It is BS. Because there is a conflict of interest, even for an AUM manager. And that is, their conflict is they don't want the AUM to drop. So is their advice conflicted? It very well could be.
Right.
I'm not saying every single AUM advisor is giving that advice, but the cynic in us say there are some out there who may have
right.
done
so,
that.
And I'm not casting a wide enough blanket whatever to say that that's what is going on in every one of these instances, but I will say I'm confident that a number of your peers that you point out got this advice, that you could find the root of that advice in what we just mentioned.
Yeah, because the advisor doesn't want to see a $300 a year cut in their pay every year.
From that person and the other person
yeah.
and all
do
these
the
people.
Do the math, yeah.
That's all these people.
300 from him, 300, mm-hmm. 300, 300. Gee, pretty soon I'm losing thousands of dollars a year of revenue.
Right.
No, Mr. and Mrs. Client, you should turn your Social Security on. It's going to run out of money. Right. Get it out while you can.
Yep.
It's those kind of
playing upon
practice.
Fears,
yes.
Which is the typical strategy for someone who's trying to manipulate you to make a decision that's in actually their interest rather than yours, playing upon your fears.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing I think people do is they discount the value of lifetime income. They don't realize how valuable an inflation-protected lifetime stream of income is. It is very difficult to replicate that. So when you say you don't need it, if you're so wealthy that the Social Security is just extra pocket money that is going on, who cares when you claim it? If you're that wealthy, that Social Security is that insignificant in the grand scheme of things, you don't need to really worry about it. And who cares what the financial advisor's motivations were? But if you aren't in that category and it actually there is a chance you're going to run out of money and you're going to need income for the rest of your life to cover your basic living expenses and that sort of thing, lifetime income that increases with inflation is very valuable. Very valuable, especially the survivor benefit that you leave behind for the surviving spouse, whether it be the wife or the husband. That cannot be dismissed or overlooked. You've got to consider that when you're claiming at 62, you're essentially planting a flag in the ground saying, I want to take the lowest Social Security benefit now and forever that
Amen.
I'm due, and I want to leave my spouse with that lowest possible benefit I can.
But not only that, let's borrow from what we shared in the first email question we answered when the Iowan said to us in her email, if I have to ask you this question in my 50s, how am I going to be able to understand it in my 80s? Same thing here. If you take at 62 a smaller amount, and you're going to try to maintain your assets, the older you, the 80, 90-year-old you, they're not going to understand managing assets. I'm sorry, you're not. Whether the do-it-yourselfers want to listen to us on that or not, I don't care. But that part of their brain is going to be degrading. Whereas if you wait on your Social Security, consume your assets, spend from them when you're understanding what in the heck it is you're doing, and you can manage them, later in life, that 33 to 76% more Social Security, remember, these people are claiming at 62, that's 76% less Social Security than they would get if they waited to 70. Now they're in their 80s trying to replicate the same amount of income they would have been receiving 100% guaranteed from Social Security through a damn withdrawal strategy from a portfolio. And they're not going to understand it, Chris.
Right.
That's the point. We try to get people to keep it simple. And the simplest way is spend from your money younger take Social Security later. I just read Mary Beth Franklin. You know Mary Beth. Mary Beth Franklin is probably one of the more preeminent talking heads in our industry on Social Security. She just didn't. Well, I can't say just. I'm like 2 months behind on her articles. This one came out in August, so I'm
not too far.
About 2 months
still
behind
this year. Yeah.
And but it was. Delaying Social Security or not, where do you spend from if you delay? And her whole point was, if you do delay rather than claiming early, it is better. And she cited a study that showed the average portfolio will last 7 years longer before it runs out. If that person delayed Social Security to 70 and spent from it earlier, than someone who turns Social Security on early and spends from it later because of that 76% difference in Social Security between age 62 and age 70.
And that increase from 62 to 70 doesn't depend upon the market doing well or interest rates climbing or going down or any of the typical things that would affect your financial life. These are, you know, things that affect other traditional financial assets. Social Security, the benefit you get is a formula based on your age, your earnings during your working life, and the day you claim. Those are the things that affect it. It has nothing to do with market returns or is there a recession?
Interest rates, what the Federal Reserve is doing.
None of that. So it's you know, very predictable, which becomes very valuable in retirement. There's so many things that are unpredictable. Having a substantial chunk that's 100% predictable is actually great. Now, people are pointing out, well, that's not 100% predictable because in 2034, the trust fund is going to run out. I admit that you know, that's in the news and that's going to happen if there isn't a change made. But assuming that when the trust fund runs out, you know, and assuming it even happens in the first place, but assuming that trust fund runs out, Social Security isn't gone. Social Security then is just simply paying out what it has coming in. And without any changes, they can pay out 80% of the promises that they've made so far. So yes, is there a chance that your Social Security could go down? Possibly, but it's very low for the people who are concerned about it.
The only thing I want to throw out on that again before we wrap this segment up is the underfunding of Social Security at $2 trillion is a drop in the bucket of the unfunded liabilities this government has. Over 100 million of the underfunding is Medicare. And you never hear anyone saying that, Medicare is in trouble. Medicare's nobody. It's always, you got to claim Social Security right away. It's underfunded. And as we said, is that really unbiased advice or is it tainted advice? But if you're that worried about Social Security, listeners, you better be damn worried about Medicare because Medicare is the 800-pound gorilla in the room, not a $2 trillion underfunded Social Security liability, but the $100 trillion unfunded liability of Medicare. Right. So if fixing Social Security is going to be easy.
Yeah, and you can claim at 62. We're not saying everyone should delay.
No.
All we want people to do is claim at 62 because it's the right thing to do for the right reasons, not this fear tactic, it's going to run out, so you better claim it now. Get yours while you can because it's not going to be there. That's not the right motivation here. That's not the right reason
especially
to claim
if the person giving you that advice is also being paid to manage your assets.
Yep.
I still firmly believe you need asset management, you pay someone to manage your assets. You want financial planning advice, you pay separately for that advice. Only then am I convinced the advice is truly untainted because someone is being paid to analyze your financial situation and give you sound advice and not being paid to manage your assets. So many investment advisors throw quote-unquote financial planning in for free under their asset management cost. And in my also very humble opinion, those people truly aren't unbiased. There is a bias there. There is a taint. There is a conflict of interest. And if they're the ones who are telling you to leave your assets and claim Social Security, we just want to make sure that truly is what you should do.
Right. So thanks for joining us here again on the Retirement IRA Show. Like we mentioned before, on October 16th, if you hear this in time, hopefully you can catch the live version of the Retirement IRA Show as we broadcast it from our website, jimhelps.com, at 2:30 Mountain Time on October 16th will be the inaugural version of the live Retirement and IRA Show. We'll be recording it so you can listen to it after the fact. Ongoing, we're going to try to do this regularly. We will announce it with plenty of time. Probably we'll have Julia keep people up to date on when we're going to have a live show or when we're not going to have a live show via maybe the newsletter or on our Facebook page. So we'll find a way to keep people informed as to when it's going to be live and when it might not. But we will start trying to do this here, 2:30 Mountain Time on Mondays beginning October 16th. So thanks for joining us again this week on the Retirement and IRA Show, and we'll see you next week.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.